on the Suwannee River, far, far away. There's where my heart is turning ever. There's where the old folks stay. No songs from the pen of mortal man came more from the heart than the songs of Stephen Collins Foster. And no song is any closer to the hearts of all true Southerners than Stephen Foster's Old Folks at Home, more widely known not only in the South but all over the world as Way Down Upon the Suwannee River. Stephen Foster wrote other songs, more than 200 altogether. And with his music, he engraved his name on the hearts of people all over the world. The music of Stephen Foster was the outpouring of a man deeply inspired by the love of his family and home, his boyhood memories, and the robust gaiety that marked the era in which he lived, the fabulous years from 1826 to 1864. Those were the lusty years when America had new frontiers to conquer, and the jumping-off place to unknown lands was the brawling city of Pittsburgh. Stephen Collins Foster was a product of this time. He was to come to fame by conquering yet a new frontier. Foster came into the world amidst the noise and hubbub of celebration, the boom of saluting cannons, the bursting of rockets, the drinking of hearty toasts, and the stirring patriotic music of America's national anthem greeted Stephen Foster when he first saw the light of day. But all this fanfare was not in honor of the newborn Foster, for it was the occasion of America's 50th Independence Day, July 4th, 1826. On this historic day in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, began the life of America's troubadour. Foster rose in the world of music to its very heights, and from his immortal pen flowed a succession of songs of the people. These were simple, heartwarming compositions inspired by the very basic soul of America. Lo, the chanting voices of Negroes along the wharves and waterfronts of the great Ohio River, where paddle-wheeled steamboats, rich in cargoes of furs and spice and commerce of the world, had a music of their own. Stephen Foster cometed across the heavens of music in a brief burst of glory. He tapped out his haunting, simple melodies with the eloquence of a magic gift, leaving these songs for Americans and people everywhere to be sung and played down through the years. Foster disappeared into oblivion almost as quickly as he had come, leaving this life as a near beggar who slept in the basement of a weather-beaten home on Old Elizabeth Street in New York City. Young Stephen Foster spent much of his life on the banks of the mighty Ohio River. It was there and along the docks and waterfronts where chanting Negro voices flowed, and in his association with his family's bound slaves, that he first came to know the South of which he wrote so vividly. Foster first felt the lure of the stage and the musical world when in 1835, at the age of 9, he was honored as the star performer in a presentation whose lesser actors were neighborhood children. They sang the Negro songs of their time, Zip Coon, Long Tail Blue, Coal Black Rose, and Jim Crow. Perhaps this episode and the childhood of Stephen Foster kindled the flame of inspiration that was later to sweep the world. As Stephen Foster came into manhood, a new craze swept the nation. Above the footlights from Broadway westward along the trails of the trailblazing pioneers, Burnt Cork minstrels trod the boards with their comic interpretations of the legendary Jim Crow. Such luminaries of the Sawdust Trail as Pot Pie Herbert, Hop Robinson, and Andrew Jackson Allen helped make the blackface performer a real part of the American theater. But it was the inimitable T.D. Daddy Rice who wrung from the hearts of audiences all over the United States and Europe the roaring applause that skyrocketed minstrel shows to popularity. And with this new and different type of showmanship, a new sort of music came into vogue. It was the music of the Southland and the Southern Darkie. The songs told of tears and sadness. They rang with laughter. They were Stephen Foster. In 1848, gold was discovered in California. The rush to yellow riches became a flood by 1849, and these would-be miners rolled westward to the rollicky, lusty melody of O Susanna. It was sung around the campfires and on the trail, and it became the theme song of these hearty pioneers. Stephen Foster's O Susanna caught the public's fancy and swept across the United States and over a large part of the world, never dreaming that this song would become the number one hit in America. Stephen had given the song to a publisher for 50 free copies of the published work. Due to Foster's generosity with uncopyrighted manuscripts and the laxity of laws protecting composers, at least 19 stolen versions of O Susanna appeared on the market within 3 years of its original publication. Stephen Foster wrote his songs and lived with gaiety in his beloved Pittsburgh, a roistering city, the gateway to the West. His best years were those years between 1850 and 1860, but never did he manage to keep his expenditures less than his income. While he was carving for himself a special niche in the Hall of Fame, he was struggling to keep successive landlords paid in part. Music in the 19th century did not make men rich. But deep in the soul of Stephen Foster, there burned a romantic flame, a flame that spoke in the nostalgic vein like a plaintive cry of a campfire violin. Songs like the one he wrote in 1854 when he was alone in the great city of New York, a song that spells the yearning he felt for his wife, the girl whose name was Jane, but who became immortal in the song,
I dream of thee with a light brown hair, born like a vapor on the summer air. I see her dripping where the bright streams play.
And Stephen Foster had a long memory, a memory steeped in those things that made him a man who felt deeply the woes of the world and who strove with all his genius to make his fellow men understand the tragedy that tortured his sensitive soul. When he was courting his wife, Jane, her father, Dr. McDowell, a noted Pittsburgh physician, had an old servant named Joe. One night, when Foster and his bride-to-be were leaving for a party, Stephen patted old Joe on the head and said, "Someday I'm going to write a song about you." Long after Joe was dead, in 1860 it was, Stephen Foster wrote one of his immortal songs. It was dedicated to old Joe, and it brought from the depth of his heart a story of toil and trial and tribulation. Stephen Foster kept his promise, and an old Negro servant also became immortal. Life plays its cruel tricks. In 1860, Stephen Foster went to New York. He was removed from the prime motivating factor in his life, his family. Then there were no psychologists, no doctors who could guide his steps or tell his family how to treat this highly sensitive piece of human mechanism who was both genius and common man, a strange combination. Stephen Foster wrote songs on wrapping paper and slept in a cellar. It is conceivable and wonderful to believe that Stephen Foster, who as far as music was concerned was self-taught, had buried deep inside his burning soul a song or songs that he strove to write but could not bring to the world. And he wasted away alone and oft-times hungry in a city that was as foreign to his nature as bitter wine is to nectar. One of his last songs tells the story of Stephen Foster better than the spoken word. It tells in his own words the philosophy he carried with him throughout life and into that dismal ward in Bellevue Hospital where he died from injuries suffered in a fall. In his pocketbook, the attendants found 35 cents and a tattered note on which was written just these words: "Dear friends and gentle hearts." Perhaps the first line of another immortal song that Stephen Foster never was allowed to write. But that nearly last song of Stephen Foster, the one that best describes the man himself, well, it went like this. And this is the story of the man who endeared himself to the whole South with his most popular song, "Way Down Upon the Suwannee River."